go. Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glass.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
I thank and praise God for this borewell that God has enabled us to put in this village with the prayer and support of Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Radio Ministry. And by the prayer and support of the Pastor Greg Young and the Chosen Generation Ministry, we could put the borewell in this village for the community. Before, this community was drinking dirty water, and that was really causing a lot of sickness. But now they are getting pure and fresh water, and all the community is so thankful for Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Ministry and all the supporters. And we pray for all of you that God would bless you and God would use you so that we can put more and more borewells in a poor and a needy community, those who are really having a problem of the water. And this is this borewell we have put, and pure and fresh water is coming, and we are so thankful for all of you. Especially we thank to Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Ministry that help us and supported us to put the borewell. Thank you. God bless you.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any difference. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome to the program. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice somewhere you can listen each and every day. And I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio. Well, folks, I've got a great program lined up for you. Bottom of next hour, Lynn M. Taylor will be with us. We're going to talk about parental rights and some of the deception that is associated with how, remember that everything that the enemy does, he does in an effort to try to mirror what we think is going to be good, but he does it in such a way so as to maintain control. And it's all about the deception. And so now you're watching the left saying, oh yeah, of course we want to give parents their rights. Well, no, they don't really want to give parents their rights. They want to create the facade of parental rights under a tyrannical, authoritative control system. And we'll talk with Lynn about that. Also coming up at the top of next hour. We'll be joined by Jared Knott. 39 Tiny Mistakes That Changed the World Forever is the name of his book. He's a former Marine. Always a Marine, of course, right? Once a Marine, always a Marine. But we'll talk with him about the mistakes that may be being made right now. And some of those are what are impacting. By the way, have you seen any arrests made with regards to the storming of the White House? Do we have another POW camp, maybe? Are any of those people being charged with anything at all? No?
No.
Interesting. Not a thing! Not a thing! My goodness. All right. Let me welcome my guest to the program. We want to continue to give you updated information and address, you know, the disinformation that is causing what we watched this weekend. I want to welcome Dr. David Wormser to the program. Dr. Wormser, welcome. Good to have you.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you, Pastor.
My. So, I mean, the violence that we're seeing, the protests, and these protesters are not calm, peaceful, you know, march down the street. Hey, you know, and I want to bring really, really quickly something I was thinking about. My friend Bill Federer talks about this. I've done extensive, and I'm going to post what I sent you. By the way, I haven't posted it yet. But I think the majority of it is pretty on point, you know, just kind of laying out what's happening. But Bill Federer talks about Islam. This is a religion, and it's not really a religion. This is an ideology. This is one heretical lunatic's dream to create something whereby he is going to be worshipped and remembered by all of those that follow him, and whereby he had complete and total authoritative control to fulfill all of his sick fantasies, including pedophilia and basically having a banquet and watching people he didn't like or whatever his trip was slaughtered and murdered in front of him while he ate. I mean, this was a very sick individual that had major mental problems, and now he's considered to be this great, you know, he's referred to as the prophet, but it's deranged, man. And so Bill talks about their 1400 year pattern. Present yourself as a religion of peace. They did that in Mecca and other places where Jews had settled. Then he took over politics. Then he slaughtered all of the Jews in those areas, first in Mecca, and then he came back to where he had been thrown out of and began to slaughter the Jews there. And that's the third step. So it's religion of peace, take over politics, and then move to a military attack. Americans don't even realize we're under military attack right now in our own borders.
Yeah, I would add one more dimension to it is that he sends people out and he doesn't really claim credit for it. It's the ideology is the command. And therefore, you can never say he ordered. It is others who did it, fully understanding what he was ordering, but through the language of faith.
And it's in the Quran. I mean, it's written in the Quran to kill infidels.
And this is
infidels.
Also the earliest Islamic way of war, is they relied on loyalty through the ideology, but gave considerable autonomy to the local forces to carry out the jihad. That way he wasn't held accountable, et cetera, or the caliph later and so forth. This is important because you keep hearing American intelligence, American officials saying we don't have direct evidence that so-and-so ordered. First of all they have to say is a line in the Quran and everybody understands it. Our military looks at that and says it's just a line in the Quran. A Muslim looks at that and said, that's a command. And we don't understand, we don't, you know, one of the things in Israel after the invasion 4 weeks ago is a lot of Israelis said, we don't speak Arabic anymore. And by that, they didn't mean the language. They meant the culture, that they don't culturally speak Arabic anymore. They forgot that they're dealing with Arabs and not another Western country. And there's a different mentality, there's a different way of doing things and a different way of war. And we have to come to terms with that, that this is very much not, you know, we saw this with ISIS. We kept saying these are aberrations. The ISIS was following to the letter what they were reading in the Quran. For example, there was one, I had an argument with an intelligence official once where they saw al-Baghdadi, who was the head of ISIS in Iraq, and he was he picked a little twig of a tree off the floor, and he started using it as a toothpick. And the intelligence officer said, "These are the primitive people we're dealing with. They just pick a tooth, they just pick a twig off the floor. This is primitive. Don't they have toothpicks? You know, number one, and it's unsanitary." And they didn't understand. This was not. That twig was put there. Why was it put there? Because in the Quran, Muhammad, after a specific moment, did that. So they are emulating to a T something Muhammad did. He saw a twig on the floor, he picked it up, and he cleaned his teeth. That was in the Quran. And as a result, al-Baghdadi, to emulate the prophet,
right,
did the same. It
right.
wasn't primitive. It was emulation of the prophet.
It's evidentiary of exactly what you're saying and what we're trying, what American and the West does not understand. On the one hand, you know, I would proffer that it's that there's an evil that is a part of this, and it is. I mean, it's evil that what they do is wicked. But on the other hand, They don't see it as wicked. They don't see it as evil. They see us as the wicked. They see us as the evil. They see us as the problem. No matter how nice, and this was the other thing that I think that you and I have talked about a bit, no matter how nice we want to try to be, they don't care about nice.
Mm-hmm. That, look, as long as Islam, Sunni Islam especially, has no interpretation, it is literal. And that means what you see in the Quran is how they must act. And it was a very brutal rise to power, very brutal. They believe it's legitimate because they are acting in the will of God. So therefore, it's God. If you have a problem with the methods they're using, take it up with God. But of course, you can't take it up with God, and you shouldn't take it up with God. That's their mentality. So for them, if it's done by them, it's what God willed it to happen. And if you lost and you are subject to such horrific things, then it's God's will that you are subject to such horrific things. God has decided to judge you. So therefore, judgment happens. So there's no sense of personal responsibility or personal restraint in this order. You are acting as an agent of God. You have no agency here. So if you are moved to kill somebody and cut his head off, that is what you are moved to do by God. And the very idea that you have agency, that you have free will, is an affront to God, because their view is God is in a totality and there is no free will. And that therefore, if you question what they did, you're questioning God.
Yeah, and so it is really it's so contrary to our comprehension from the Western world perspective. And I guess the thing that is unique in that is, I mean, on the one hand, right, you know, God's word in our Holy Bible that we read You know, we know that God's word is absolute. We know that God is sovereign. We know that our God is a loving God. And we know that there are consequences that we have when we disobey what his word has to say. But the carrying out of those consequences most times are what happens to us in our lives when we do things contrary to what his word says, which then ultimately leads us back to realizing that, hey, you know what, maybe God does know better than we do.
He knows better, and there are expectations of us. Ever since the Garden of Eden, the punishment of knowledge, remember, one of the things that we were punished with as humans was knowledge. And you'd think, well, that's quite some punishment. That's a good thing, knowledge. Yes, but it also entails agency and responsibility.
Right.
And as a result, we are judged for what we do by God, because we have agency over what we do, and we have the skills. We have a certain level of divine capability in our brains, nowhere near what God has. We will never know his way, but we have some faculties, and therefore we can't excuse ignorance or lack of agency for what we do. And that way we have judgment. We have judgment, whether you're Jewish and it's on Yom Kippur or whatever, or the end of days when you die, or in Christianity, you have judgment at the end, whether you've accepted Christ, etc.
Right.
So there's a sense of responsibility and consequence to what the way you've lived your life and what you've done. In Islam, the whole idea is alien. The idea that there's human agency means there is a force that works outside the will of God. In other words, you have violated the oneness of God, the totality of God. Any action, they don't even have the idea of physics. Why? Because if you have laws of physics, you have something that's existing out of the first cause of God. In other words, if I take my coffee cup, I push it and it spills, that's not the laws of physics. Every single part of that is an act of God. Namely, he made me push it, God made it tip over, the water spilled out. It wouldn't have happened each step unless God willed it at that moment. So there's no secondary cause. I didn't do something that caused something to happen. Because if there is, then the will of God, for at least for a moment, is suspended and some other thing takes over to act, whether it's the laws of physics or human will or whatever. And that tears apart the unity of God in their view. So there is no secondary cause. In fact, it's called Asharism, and it's the reigning ideology of Sunni Islam. So in all this, if I act and I slaughter a baby, how can I be ultimately evil? Because it's obvious I don't have free agency and I don't have knowledge beyond what God wants me to have. So
right.
Therefore, I did what God's will was. It's, by the way, politically locked in. The Shiites are a little different, and they have interpretation, and unfortunately, interpretation can lead people to very dangerous places, but it is necessary. Christianity and Judaism has interpretation. That's why you have these schools of theology and so forth. But why is it important? Because the fourth caliph was overthrown in a military coup, and that's where the split between Sunni and Shia Islam started. The guy who won was the first Sunni, so to speak. And his argument for why he won was, I won, which meant God willed it to happen. I'm only an agent of God. We have no free will. So if I won, it must be legitimate. Therefore, you follow me. So right there, at the very beginning, politically, the very identity that separated Sunni Islam from Shiite Islam is anchored fundamentally to the idea of no free will and no independence action. So for them, everything that happens is an expression of God's will. There is no judgment that you should pass on Hamas for beheading 3-month-old babies. or a baby in a womb, in fact. There is no judgment for that because it's God's will. The moment you say it's not God's will or it goes against God, you have already committed a heresy, a horrible heresy, because you're saying something happens without God wanting it to happen.
It's really, again, it's beyond our ability, I think, in the West to fully comprehend the evil that is associated with this.
Yeah.
And there's no, you know, in my mind, there's no question that this is an evil. And that's why I push back regularly when someone says, oh, well, no, this is, you know, these are the Ishmael people and they serve the same God. That's a fallacy. It's a fallacy. Allah, I understand, and you know, then you can argue ancient languages, but the Allah that they serve is created a world that sits on the trunk of an elephant. If you read their book, okay, I mean that's what it says in the book, folks. That's what it says in the book. Allah is not the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's not the same one, not the same person, not the same entity. And you know, Christians and Jews serve the God of the Bible, the God of Abraham, the only true God. And I've had people say to me too, well, okay, but you know, what about salvation and all this other kind of stuff? You know, in my humble belief, I do believe what Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. But I also believe that God never goes back on his word. So if a Jewish person is a believer in God, if they are adherent to the word of God, then I believe that God is gonna be God and be true to who he said. Now, a secular Jewish person who says there is no God or I'm not following God or what have you is the same as any other secular person that says I'm rejecting God. And guess what? There's hellfire when you say I don't want anything to do with God for everybody. It doesn't matter who you are.
That's right. You know, I mean, the big difference is that Christianity and Judaism are umbilically linked. They're basically, you know, you have Judaism. Christianity considers Judaism to be the Bible to be genuine. It isn't corrupted. And the Jewish people were the Jewish people. But there was an expansion and transition in Christianity that accepted that and said, but there are further revelations, further things. And therefore, you know, we are consistent with the Bible and what Judaism, but we are now the next rendition of it, or not next, we are the continuation of it. That's the way that, so it's all consistent. There's no revolutionary rejection of the Bible.
Right.
Islam, the basic point is God came to Moses. He gave him a revelation.
Muhammad.
The Jews are too corrupt.
Oh, Moses. Right. Yeah, okay.
The Jews are too corrupt. And they corrupted the revelation so the Bible that the Jews have is considered corrupt and wrong and a violation of God's will by the evil of the Jewish people who saw it, who corrupted it. So he had to come down again, and he saw Jesus, and he again gave him the true revelation. But again, the Christians corrupted it and did the same thing the Jews did and completely obliterated it and turned it into an evil. So we had to come down again to Muhammad. But Muhammad is the true revelation. It is the last prophet. It is the final revelation, because what Muhammad passed is the actual. So the Quran, in their view, is what was given to Moses. It was what was given to Jesus. So the Quran is the real deal, and this Bible that we have, that we Jews and we Christians have, that's corrupt, that's not real. It just, that's their view, but that's why they can dissemble. And they can say, well, we have great respect for Jesus. We consider him a prophet. Well, yeah, but they think that he was corrupted. And what we think Jesus said and did and taught and preached is corruption. Mm-hmm. That what we think he said is not what he actually said. What he said was the Quran, just like Muhammad passed forward. That's the view.
And it's interesting because the woke progressives don't have a problem necessarily. They use this idea, Islam, you watch it around the globe. Communism uses Islam as a means to clean out, because communists' greatest enemy is Christians and Jews. Why? Because of that Bible. Because of that Bible. Because they know that's the true God. And they know that the only way, and they, for years and years, they've tried to kill the Christians and they've tried to kill the Jews, and they can't quite seem to exterminate us. Mm-hmm. And so the only entity that they believe is strong enough on earth with the strong enough intent to actually do that is Islam. They believe that Islam will clean the continents of these Christians and Jews so that the communists can actually ultimately take over. And they believe that in the end, you know, once they've used Islam, then Islam will either bow to them or be destroyed.
Absolutely. You know, this linking of communism to Islam, I think it's a very deep historical and I think philosophical idea. And I think that there's a lot there that is more actually real than just similarity. We talked about how Islam, Sunni Islam, they did not accept the idea of any fissures in the world. There's no human free agent. Agency. So under that circumstance, a political leader is also the spiritual leader. There is no difference. The power must be absolute and total in the great leader. And there is no, because he's the agent of God. The reason why this is important is that we do believe in free agency, which means we understand humans are a fallen species, basically. We are not perfect. We have sin. And we have the capability of further sin. And politics is about human activity. So therefore, politicians will be corrupt. Politicians will do things they shouldn't do. We have our faith. Our faith is our conscience. It is our values. It is our identity. And that should be the it should box in the political leadership to define what they're allowed to do. But the political leadership are humans, and they do things they shouldn't do sometimes. So for us, there are always checks and balances on the power of the government because they are humans. They're not God. In Islam, they are the agents of God. There should be no checks and balances. Otherwise, you're checks and balancing God. And moreover, checks and balances, again, rip the unity of the world. If you have two bodies that operate independent of each other, it means that the unity of God has been torn into two. So the very system of classic liberalism that defines America is anchored to this idea. By the way, it's in Judaism. The idea that Judaism didn't have a similar division is wrong. Whether you look at the various prophets, whether you look at the debates in the Talmudic period, there was a constant debate in Judaism about how much authority goes to the mundane and how much goes to the religious structures. And there was a belief that that needs to be kept separate. The world of the spiritual and the world of the political needs on some level to be kept separate. The spiritual must guide the political and must be the filter through which the political operates. But it isn't unified because the political is inherently human and humans are inherently flawed. So that's why we have the form of politics we have in our freedom. Whereas in Islam, when you get to communism, it has the same view as Islam, that there is a totality. The leader is perfect. And he must, the anybody who does not follow the leader is violating the, and they believe, the secular laws of history, or the arc of history is what they like to use, the communists. This concept of the arc of history and predeterminism by some historical force that this brilliant intellectual leader knows, but nobody else does. So they don't believe, like Islam, they believe in totality of power. So that's why the totalitarianism of communism is actually identical to the totalitarianism of Sunni Islam.
It's really quite scary.
Yeah. By the way, they're also historical. I won't bore everybody with historical, but there's probably lines of influence that caused communism from Islam.
Well, more than likely. All right.
Going back 200 years and more.
Okay. Let's talk about where things sit right now, because there, you know, the intensity of as I look at it, there's two big pushes. We see what's happening on the streets here in America, but it's around the world, where you have the Palestinian Hamas. It's the Iranian, I believe, influence. And this is the part that I find difficult to understand, why there's not been any identifying or more focus on this. It's clear, you know, I was reading a post by somebody on Facebook who's like, well, you know, you're going to get Iran. If we're not careful, we're going to get Iran involved. And I'm thinking, you know, okay, that you really don't understand what's happening over there if you think that Iran is not already involved. Iran's running this whole program, in my opinion.
Yes. Well, first of all, they've already attacked American forces in Iraq and Syria 50 to 60 times in the last 2 weeks. That we're not responding and the press isn't focused on that doesn't mean it isn't happening. There are no American soldiers killed yet, but there have been Americans wounded. And I think the Iranians will continue to hit us like that because they want to make the point that this is not Israel fighting them. It's the great Satan. It's America, not the little Satan. They want to say that the great little Satan is so weak and pathetic, it's falling to pieces, and it needs its big brother America to save it. So they want America to be involved. They want to show they're fighting America. And they're counting on the fact that Biden is too weak to meaningfully respond. So it's perfect for them. Yeah. But they're already at war. They're at war in Europe, in America. These people out there on the streets are under directive of Hamas, which is under directive of Iran. I'd go even further. They're using Chinese networks. They're using KGB networks.
Yep.
There is a cluster of evil that's coming at us. And we at our peril are ignoring this. This is a many front attack on us. And make no mistake, they are right now attacking Jews. But these are the same Antifa, you know, the red, green, black coalition, red being communism, green being Islamism, and black being fascist. This is the same red, green, black coalition that did the Summer of Love in 2020.
Right.
And all the businesses burned. These are the same people. Today it's Jews they're attacking. Tomorrow it's this, whatever. At the bottom line is, it's the American idea they are attacking. They know Jews in America, the position of Jews in America. And believe me, for Jews, America has been a utopia for the last 300 years.
We talked about that Friday. Yeah.
Exactly. It has been a utopia because the American idea is so friendly, if not even intertwined with Judaism and Christianity and so forth. If you're rejecting America, you are going to go after Jews. You're going to go after Christians.
Yeah.
You're going to go after people of faith. In the end, it all comes around to the same place, attack on America.
Let me shift gears for a minute, because the media is pushing this narrative. The marchers are pushing this narrative. I sent you a video that a friend of mine had sent to me to get your thoughts on this. And you and I have covered, and I'm going to put up on my blog post a breakdown answering the questions regarding the size of the attack, regarding the breakdown of communications, all that. That's all going to be explained to you in this post, and I hope you'll go and read it. And then also links to Al-Rasuli, who is our Islamic expert, explaining what Islam really is. These are things, if you have not dove into these things, you need to understand. If you've dove into them, but it's been a while because of all the other clutter that's been happening, you need to be very aware of this. But where I'm going very quickly, I want to get there so that I can get your thoughts on this. And that is the assault. Israel is guilty now of genocide because they're bombing Gaza. And you know, there's a guy that put up a post saying, oh, they've killed 7,000 people in Gaza now, and it's horrific, and look how evil Israel is. And even in the video that I sent you, it's, oh, well, you know, Netanyahu, proposed a one-state Israel solution to the UN because we know that the two-state solution doesn't work. Hello, folks. It doesn't work. Okay? A two-state solution means the dissolution of the dissolving of Israel. Period. But David, speak to this attack against Hamas and the war that's going on from Israel's perspective.
By the way, the Gaza was the two-state solution. It was a fully independent government, fully independent state operating that had one and only one purpose, is to arm and prepare an attack to kill Jews. That was the only point. So that's the problem Israel has, is they controlled Gaza. They gave it up. It became that. They controlled territory in Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, gave it up, became a basis of attacking Jews. Every piece of territory, every inch of territory Israel has given up for peace has been used to kill Jews against it afterwards, not to build a state. There's nothing constructive. Now, about the war, first of all, the numbers. 7,000, 10,000, 11,000. These are numbers coming from Hamas. And we know Hamas lies. We know it from the missile, the famous hospital incident where they claimed Israel killed 500 people in a rocket attack. It turned out it was an errant rocket from Hamas, from Palestinian Islamic Jihad, that fell on a hot hospital. In other words, they shot themselves. And two, it was maybe 10 to 20 people who were killed, not 500. But facts don't matter. 500 people are dead. That's what they claim. And Israel killed them. So the idea that Israel killed 10,000 assumes that the numbers they're giving are correct, which they're not. Number two, it assumes that everybody who's dead was killed by Israel. And they're not. We know that Hamas, 40% of all the missiles they shoot do not reach out of Gaza. They collapse. They're not high-quality missiles. They fall. They're very high-powered warheads, but they're not high-quality missiles, and they break apart sometimes, or they stall, or they don't fire right, and they fall back on the population. So 40%, almost half of all the missiles fired at Israel, fall back on the Palestinians. And you can only imagine how many people get killed by that. The third thing is they kill their own people. We have plenty of video evidence, eyewitness accounts now, where they kill their own people in order to prevent them from. The Israelis know where all the Hamas bunkers are. Problem is they've put hospitals on top of them. They've put huge civilian structures on top of them, schools, kindergartens. So the Israelis are, according to the Geneva Convention, the Israelis are following to the letter. They are giving warning to leave. This is a military target. You must leave. They've warned 10, 20 times in the last 4 weeks. Certain areas are to be evacuated. That's what they're required to do, and they've done it. The Geneva Convention really only talks about evacuating in hours' notice. Israelis have given weeks of notice and repeatedly.
Right.
Why aren't these people leaving? Because when they do, they're shot by Hamas. And we have videos. We have evidence of them shooting people when they leave. We have evidence of them, one of the humanitarian convoys heading south. They put a car bomb in it. So Palestinians are afraid. They'd rather take their chances with the Israeli army coming and then they will knowingly be killed by Hamas when they evacuate to the south. These are horrible, grisly people who like dead Palestinians too, Hamas, because it's great propaganda. They don't care about their people. In fact, they care about them being dead. And that's what we have to understand. This is evil. They kill their own people. So these numbers of 10,000, my bet is in the end, a very tiny fraction of that is actually going to be people killed by the Israelis in collateral damage. Civilians killed by Israelis. Oh, that's the other thing. They lumped together all the terrorists with anybody else did. So we know Israel's probably killed already thousands of terrorists. So even if 10,000 is right, a good 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 can be terrorists. So we cannot take these numbers seriously. We have to wait till this is over and do a meticulous forensic analysis of who was killed, by whom, and for what reason. But I know the Israelis are doing absolutely everything humanly possible, more than we did in Iraq, by the way, or any other war we fought, to avoid civilian casualties.
Well, I think, David, too, that it's important to understand, again, going back to what we talked about in the first half hour, is the mindset of those. The Islamic people living in Gaza believe what we talked about in the first half hour relative to their commitment. It's why they celebrated when jihad, when the act of jihad, and jihad is the sixth pillar of Islam, which no yes. one talks about. Every single Muslim is required to be a participant in jihad. Required. Okay? You can say, well, I've got a good friend that's a Muslim. I'm not saying that's not the case. But I've heard story after story, firsthand accounts of individuals, people who lived in places like Lebanon, that when the Islamists rose up and overthrew and took over that country, those nice Muslim families that live next door to the non-Muslims, if they were lucky, came over and told the non-Muslim, at midnight tonight, you must be gone. Yeah. Because if you're not gone, I am going to be coming over here to kill your entire family.
Yes.
Period.
It's absolutely true.
Period. And so when we say, oh, the innocent, you know, this and the, as you said, every one of those that does not agree. Now I know a lot of them were blocked by Hamas. This is what they do. I get that. But by and large, the ones that stayed are the ones that believe in the cause, if you will. And the
yes.
and unfortunately, belief in the cause has a consequence, not just for the one, not just in how Israel is addressing this, but literally in how Israel must address it in order to survive the fact that they are down for the cause.
Yeah, you know, we since World War II, we've developed this idea in the West, which is another one of these ideas that collapsed on October 7th, that war is antiseptic. It's organizations and governments wage war, not peoples. So therefore, our enemy isn't the people. And in the Cold War, it was true in many ways because Czechoslovakia, Poland, and so forth. These were hostages to Soviet power. And in the end, we realized even the Russians hated their own government in after 75 years. So we kind of split it. And you see it also in Iran. The Iranian people are done with their government. They hate it.
Right.
So we have to maintain that in our mind. But that said, in Germany in World War II, in Japan in World War II, these were nations at war with us. These were not just governments. These were nations. Now, were they manipulated by the government? Yeah, whatever. Yes. Bottom line is the nations were committed to the war against us, and we had to fight them as a nation. We didn't just hit Japanese government facilities. We went after the nation, industrial capacity, everything. And we understood there's going to be a lot of civilians killed, but that's the cost of deciding to go to war. When we look at Hamas in the West Bank and Gaza, you cannot say that they are a small little minority that's imposing themselves on the Palestinians.
Right.
They won the elections in Gaza.
By a lot.
By a lot. By all accounts, there are some Gazans who don't like that government because it's impoverishing them and so forth. So I don't know what the current support for Gaza is, but it's probably still in the large amounts, 30-40% or more. That's a lot of people supporting Hamas.
Can I add that that's 40% supporting Hamas, and I believe the number is like 38% support Hamas, and another 28-32% support Fatah. So all told, you're talking about at least 70%, and then there's a couple of smaller elements that make up small percentages. 75-80% of Gaza is made up of individuals that believe, irrespective of whether they support Hamas or Fatah or one of the smaller sects, but they all ultimately believe in the concepts we talked about in the first half hour, that Islam is the way, and that anyone that does not follow Islam must be exterminated, beginning with the Jews.
Absolutely. And that's a very important point. If you take the polls right now, and you add up those, it does 75-80%. And then that's borne out by, if you take a very simple question, do you support what happened on October 7th to the Jews? Do you believe that was good, or do you believe that it should have been even more horrific? Huge, vast majority, even if they have problems with Hamas, do agree on that point. Slaughtering the Jews, decapitating little babies, is in the very least what should have happened in their mind. And we're talking 70-80% majorities. The second thing is this idea. In the West Bank, if there are no elections, why? Because Hamas would win 60-70-80% of the vote. And the PLO would lose, even though the PLO is just as cruel. They would lose. This idea that there's no – but for us in the West, even for Israelis, this is awfully difficult. It's awfully difficult to know that that there may be even one innocent person that you're killing. So they try to minimize
right.
it, knowing that they're saving the lives of people who there's an example that the Palestinian medical system in Gaza is harvesting the organs of the soldiers and hostages they killed. And they're putting it in babies and stuff like that. And there was a video of one of the mothers whose child got an organ from one of the babies they gutted. And she said, my child now can grow up to be an adult, to be a martyr, to kill Jews. What do you do with this? Yeah. I mean, she's an innocent civilian, according to humanitarian law. What do you do with this? Yeah. How do you handle this? There's the dilemma Israel faces. And yes, they're following the strictest humanitarian guidelines in prosecuting the war. But they can't stop. They can't let them get away with this. So there's going to be a culmination and a completion of this war, and it will cost people their lives.
Well, let me just play. This is a Jewish mother who is essentially making that exact point. Listen to what she says.
The women that I've seen on from Gaza are celebrating their son's success by killing and raping women. When they do that, Do you think I have someone to talk to? I am a mother. I will never celebrate something like this. Who the hell do they think they are? The culture has to change. They have to shift. Hamas has to go, and they have to decide, are they for good or are they for evil? Are they for peace or are they for war? They need to make a decision. It's not on us anymore.
It breaks my heart, man. It really truly breaks my heart because I understand, you know, I mean, I think back to the five missionaries that went down to Ecuador, and the son asked Steve Saint asked his dad Nate, you know, if they come at you on the beach, are you what are you going to do? And he said, I know where I'm going. I'm prepared to die. And I get that. That's a missionary. Folks, understand, that is a missionary. We're not talking about that here. We're not talking about missionaries. We're not talking about that's just not what's happening. We're talking about a group of individuals that want to wipe Israel and every Jew off the face of the earth. And that's not their only quest. That's not their only quest, period. And that's why I think that, you know, again, Americans need to wake up and realize what are watching here, these marches, these individuals. These are the kinds of marches where they march down streets and then somebody in the crowd is strapped with a vest and they blow up your downtown.
Or blow up the Boston Marathon, you know.
Absolutely,
it's that they do this. This is the, or mow you down in Barcelona with a truck or whatever. This is, you know. By the way, one last thing. They say, well, but boy, can you really blame the Palestinians for feeling this way because they're occupied? First of all, Gaza was not occupied.
Right.
Israel gave it up. Not one Israeli soldier, every last grain of sand was given up, and they turned it into a military base to kill Jews. Every territory. And that's the history. The history didn't start on October 7th.
Right.
The history didn't start a year ago or in 1948. It started from the very beginning. The Jews have always said, okay, you know what? We need our state. We will build it on this little territory. We'll accept partition. You guys can have all the rest.
Yep.
We need this little area where we live. Just leave us alone.
Yep.
Dozens of times the Jews have said, yes, we accept that. And dozens of times, consistently, never without exception, the Arab side has said, no, you can't even have your little corner. We will kill you. And whether it's 48 partition, whether it's the 20s, 30s, 40s, I can go through dozens of offers and UN resolutions
right.
that partition the land. And the Jews accepted it. The Palestinians and the Arabs rejected it and then attacked the Jews to wipe out that part of the partition.
All right. Let me.
And they keep losing.
We got just a very few minutes left. Gosh. So two questions. Well, we really talked about this on Friday, I think. But two questions remain for me. And if we can get the 2-minute answers on each one. Mm-hmm. The first one is, how do you respond to the idea that somehow Israel manufactured this to allow this to happen? And secondly, on the far end of this, how severe is this assault? We're talking about a 5-front war, which is something you and I projected 2 months ago in a conversation we had when we pulled out the map and looked at it. How close are we to that? So would Israel have allowed this to happen? And secondly, how close are we to the 5-front war?
There's no way they could have allowed it to happen intentionally because Israel, like, it's a very open society. So, and there's a great deal of criticism and fissures within the Israeli government. So if you try to have a conspiracy that kills soldiers, and remember, Israel has universal conscription. So you are killing your own kids. Literally killing your own kids. For example, Prime Minister Netanyahu, his son currently is serving in a combat unit in the military. The Prime Minister himself, there's no way that you can conduct such a conspiracy that willfully kills lots of Israeli soldiers without somebody in the Israeli government who opposes you exposing it. So there's really no way you can have a hidden conspiracy that way inside the Israeli government. Their own kids they're talking about here. The other thing is we are beginning, I mean, the Commission of Inquiries have not started, but we are beginning to piece together what happened. And this is a classic case of arrogance and complacence. The same thing, I hate to say it, infects our defense establishment in America right now. It could have happened to us if we had had a huge population that is bubbling inside us. But you see it on the southern border. We know what's going on, but there's a complacence. Well, okay, so terrorists are crossing the southern border, et cetera. Drug lords are crossing the southern border. But you know what? We're a country of 370 million. It's a drop in the bucket. We can handle this. It's a fantasy to think. It's a fantasy of these crazy conservatives to think that that's a real threat to our nation. Same mentality.
Yep.
Same mentality affected Israel before.
Okay. And then to the issue very quickly of the five-front war, where does that sit right now?
I think we're easing in it. We're largely in it already. What we have right now is Gaza's fully at war, obviously.
Right.
Lebanon is pretty much fully at war. It's not a full escalation yet, but like as we're speaking, three waves of missiles crossed from Lebanon into Israel. There's currently threats of drone attacks. That's every day, lots of violence.
Okay.
Syria is already hot as well, so that's three fronts. Yemen is already shooting every day in two or three volleys. They're long-range 2,000-kilometer missiles onto Israel and drones. They're being all intercepted. Algeria has already declared war, and it hasn't acted on it yet. But so we're already talking four or five fronts. The big one is obviously, I think Iran is waging that war by attacking Americans. As we spoke, another right. American airbase was hit by Iranian militias in Iraq. So we're already in a five-front war. It can get more escalated. Gaza's full tilt. Lebanon is headed toward full tilt, so will Syria. And Yemen's doing what it can. So we're in it already, pretty much.
All right. I know you'll be back. We're going to be, obviously, we're you know, this is, and I think, you know, one of the pieces of this is there's, you know, this is, there's a slow walk to a degree, and we're going to talk with my next guest a little bit about that, in part because the Biden administration has consistently asked Israel to slow down its assault as they try to prepare to, I guess, protect or defend American forces in the region, which is a good thing. I agree with that. But unfortunately, they are slow walking doing that. I mean, rather than just flipping the switch and turning that on, they're slow walking their protection of our own troops, which is in turn a domino effect, which I think is potentially detrimental to Israel.
And by 4 or 5 weeks in, we should have made a decision either to massively reinforce our troops or withdraw them. By now, that decision and that should have been done. There's no point anymore about trickling little bits more of support to our troops. They're under attack. Either reinforce them
or get them out. Yep. And let's not pull another Afghanistan.
Correct.
Yep. No question. All right, David, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you being with me today, Dr. David Wormser. You know, there's so much here to understand historically and the ideology, and it's really important to comprehend the ideology in order to understand the strategy of the enemy that we are fighting. And make no mistake, all of our culture, whether you're Jew or Christian, they're coming after all of us. And I don't say that to put fear in our hearts, but that we need to be prepared. My people perish, Hosea prophesied, for a lack of knowledge. Do not be ignorant as to the wiles of the enemy, but put on your full armor and be prepared. Dr. Wormser, thanks for being here today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. You too. Thanks.
All right, we're going to take our break. Coming up, Jared Knott talks with us about what happens when you don't make those kinds of preparations. You can get more at the website, chosengenerationradio.com. That's chosengenerationradio.com. And follow us each and every day on TECN-TV. TECN-TV, which is broadcast at chosengenerationradio.com.